before Pesach begins. So we all know that there's a prohibition to possess chametz on Pesach. Bal yeirohe and bal yeimotze. Two separate loisaseis. They may not be seen to you, and they may not be found to you. Meaning, the Gemara is a drasha, why we need both. You're not allowed to have chametz in your possession, and you're not allowed to own chametz, even if it's not in your possession. The Gemara has a whole discussion why you need both, but basically you're not allowed to own chametz. So what do? We destroy it. We eliminate chametz. We clean the house. We sell chametz. But sometimes the person has chametz of value, and you don't want to destroy. You don't want to destroy chametz. Let's say a person has a business, a supermarket. Person has real value, and you don't want to just lose your parnasa. So we sell the chametz to a non-Jew. Okay, now there's a. Now, what about the private person? Person has in his home also chametz, different things. Let's say a person has expensive whiskey. Whiskey, and a person, you don't want to throw it in the garbage. So what do? You sell it to a non-Jew. The problem is, even if you sell it to a non-Jew, there is a prohibition to have it in your possession. Just because you know you're not allowed to really even have the chametz of a non-Jew, me'ikar adin. It's not a good thing to have in your possession the chametz of a non-Jew in your own home. Why not? You may forget. If you have in your home the chametz that belongs to a non-Jew, what's going to prevent you from forgetting and consuming it? And some want to learn that this is part of the prohibition of Baal Yeroe. It may not be seen to you. It may not be seen to you even the chametz of a non-Jew in your bias. Therefore, the law is, not only do you sell the chametz to a non-Jew, you also have to sell him, we don't really sell, but at least rent to him the place where the chametz is resting. So if you go to the rabbi, and you go to the rabbi, and you tell the rabbi, I want to go sell my chametz, the rabbi will sell to you, you're not just going to sell your chametz to the non-Jew, you're going to rent the location where the chametz is located. Because not only is there a prohibition to own chametz, there's a prohibition to possess someone else's chametz in your domain. So therefore, you have an obligation to rent the location where the chametz is resting. Now, that's also not enough. Because just because you're renting the location where the chametz is located, what's going to prevent you from entering into that area and just taking it for yourself? So for that, we have to have a third takana. You have to cover it, or you have to erect a partition that's at least 10 tefachim to separate it from you. So in essence, when you're selling chametz to a guy, if you have in your home chametz, you are really doing three separate things. If you wish to maintain, to own, keep in your possession over Pesach chametz, three things have to happen. Number one, you have to actually sell the chametz. Number two, you have to rent. You can sell also, but selling is not so simple. Renting is just as good, the location where the chametz is possessed. Number three, that's also not enough. You have to do something to protect yourself from forgetting and entering into that area and stealing the chametz from the guy and eating it. So you have to cover it. Or if it's in a drawer, you have to put tape on the drawer. You have to create some type of siman, some type of sign. And if it's an open area, you have to erect a partition, a cover. You have to do something to remind yourself in some reasonable way that this is off limits. So it's a big deal. Selling chametz to a guy is not a simple thing. Three things, you're really doing three things. Selling the chametz, you're renting the location, and you are creating some type of barrier, some type of partition, some type of reminder, this is not my property. I've sold it, and even the territory, I'm giving the guy an embassy in my home. This is his property. Okay, that's an important one. That's a very important point to realize what's happening when you're selling the chametz to a guy. Now, how do you sell chametz to a guy? You go to the rabbi. You go to the rabbi. Now, you don't sell the chametz to the rabbi. That is false. The rabbi doesn't want your chametz. He doesn't need your chametz. He has no interest in your leftover Cheerios. He doesn't want to be in violation of Bal Yeiroh, Bal Yematzeh. You don't sell. You make the rabbi an agent to sell your chametz to a non-Jew. Now, the question is, how do you know the rabbi did his job? Just because you went to the shul and you picked up a handkerchief and you formally, when you go to the shul, you pick up the handkerchief or a pen, what are you really doing? You are authorizing. It's a kinyan. It is a formal kinyan with the rabbi. You are my agent. I am authorizing you to be my agent in selling my chametz to a non-Jew. And we want to make it formal. We're going to make it a kinyan. Very good. So you authorize the rabbi with a real kinyan. He has permission. Because if you don't authorize the rabbi, who says he has permission? If I go and I go to a rabbi and I say I'm selling Mark Plotnik's chametz, and I write everything down in the shtar, who says that the chametz is sold to the guy? Mark will say, I never authorized you. Who made you my agent to sell the chametz to the guy? If there's no authorization, which is because the rabbi goes and sells the chametz, who says it works? So you want to go say zochin la'adam shaloi b'fanav. Because since it's a liability to possess and pay some chametz, therefore I can do it without your authorization. Yes and no. B'di'eved, when the day is over, okay, it might actually work. But it's not a lechatchila. That's not the way you do things. When it comes to business, no one's conducting business in such a way. When it comes to business, you have a lawyer, you have legal fees, you can go do everything on the books because you're not looking for trouble. Halacha should be no less than the way you conduct business. You conduct business, you do everything according to the law, according to the rules. Then when it comes to selling your chametz, do everything according to legal rules. Authorize a person legally to be your agent. To do that, you make a kinyan. All right, so therefore everything is good. We know what we're doing three things, and we're authorizing the rabbi to do the kinyan for us. Question, halacha question. If the rabbi doesn't sell my chametz, then I'm in a lot of trouble. I am in violation of Bal Yeiroh, Bal Yematzeh. It's a serious matter. Aloy Saseh. This is not a minhag. This is not a din derabanan. This is the real deal. The rabbi really better do it for you. Can you really trust the rabbi? Can you say this? You'll tell me, of course, there's a principle called Chazaka Shaliach Oise Shalichusoi. And generally, when we discuss at length, Purim, you make it with Mishloch Manas. Mishloach manos, when you appoint an agent, ideally the agent has an obligation to come back to you and say, Asisi shluchayich, shluchayich, I have done your agency, I've done your bidding. Did anyone here ever get a phone call from the rabbi, Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, and say, Mark, I want to tell you some good news. I sold your chametz to the guy. Did anyone here ever get a phone call from the rabbi? The rabbi is calling to report back to you. Sir, I've done what you asked me to do. I don't recall. My father was a rabbi, and my father did. It was a big thing. He sold a lot of people. A lot of people came. It was a big deal. I don't recall my father ever calling up anybody. He called up a lot of people for a lot of different things. But I don't think he ever called, heard him call up someone, Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, and say, good news, mission accomplished. I sold your chametz. Why not? You're mechuyev to do so. Isn't that what a shlichus is? You appoint the rabbi your agent, make a kinyan. Don't you think the rabbi has an obligation? Follow the rules. Follow the rules. The rules are, A shaliach has an obligation to report back. So why not? So you go and tell me over here, chazaka shaliach oiseh shlichusai. So the Paiskim say, maybe you can say that when it comes to a din derabanan. If you appoint a person to do for you a mitzvah derabanan, so since it's not so, derabanan is very serious, let's not kid ourselves. But when it comes to something very, very serious, You don't say that. You don't say chazok. It's not something that lichatchila you should rely upon to say chazaka shliach oisa shlichusa. It's weak. We can use that as a backup, but it's not something that you use lichatchila when you appoint an agent to rely upon the principle that there is a presumption that an agent does what he was asked to do. This is not something that you rely upon. We all know good and well. People ask us to do them favors. We don't do anything. We sit around and you have to ask the person 20 times until he finally thinks, oh, maybe I should do it. So chazaka shliach oisa shlichusa is not such a great, powerful principle. It's a halachic principle that when push comes to shove, we can use in order to make our lives a little bit easier. But it's not something you really can rely upon lichatchila. So therefore, when a person comes to Solach HaMitzvah to the rabbi, you should really say to the rabbi, Rabbi, I'm expecting a phone call Erev Pesach to make sure that the mission was accomplished. Because if you don't do this mission, I am chayif malkois arboim. I'm in violation of a lois aseh. And besides that, practically speaking, all of my chametz will now be osur bahana when Pesach is over. I have thousands of dollars of merchandise in my store, that's chametz, and if you fail to sell it, then it becomes chametz, she'ovar olav ha-pesach, and I have to throw it in the garbage. So I have a lot of money at stake here. I'm expecting that phone call to make sure that the mission was accomplished. So what's going on? How come no one does this? So there's a solution. You know what the solution is? You give the rabbi money. You give him money. You put money. Where does it come from, the minhag to give the rabbi money? Where does it come from? It's a nice thing. It's to give the rabbi tzedakah. Rabbis are poor. Some of the rabbis today are very rich. And unfortunately, it's very unfortunate today to be a rabbi. Most rabbonim today are independently wealthy because who else would want to be a rabbi? Okay, a lot of the shuls in Lakewood, almost all the shuls in Lakewood are from rabbonim that are independently wealthy. The vast majority, they have a lot of money. So what do? They make a shul so they can pontificate. They can do whatever they want. They can talk. There are a few shuls where they have salaried rabbis. There are a few shuls, and taka, those rabbis are very poor. Those rabbis parnasa, and they need the money. But generally, people, the average person think that it's a nice thing to do. It's a nice thing to go and to give rabbi money. It's a tip. You go and you tip the rabbi. You tip the waiter, you tip the rabbi, you give him a couple of bucks. Is that bakavadik? It really reduces the rabbinate to such a low level. You make the rabbi like a waiter, but this rabbi has a busboy. Is that what it's all about? You're reducing the rabbi. A horrible thing to do that, to go look at the rabbi like a give him a little tip. The real reason why you give a rabbi money is because you are making him into a poel, not into a shaliach. Having chametz in your possession of a Pesach is very, very serious. If this was not a surgery, can you imagine if a person that goes to surgery, so the surgeon says, okay, tomorrow we're going to do open heart surgery. We're going to put you under, we're going to give you anesthesia, you put you to sleep, and let's hope for the best. We'll see what happens. Okay, then the guy, they put him under, he wakes up a day later. What do you want to know? You want to know, was the surgery successful? Isn't that what you want to know? So you have an expectation that the surgeon is going to come back into your room and tell you what happened. Was it successful or not? And if the surgeon doesn't come back, then you have enormous agmas nefesh. What happened? I want to know what happened. If you're dealing over here with halacha and you take halacha very seriously, then are you in violation of Baal Yireh Baal Yimotzeh? You want to know from your agent, you know, was it a success? Did the guy show up? Did you sell my chametz? Were there any problems? You want to know if it was accomplished. By paying the rabbi money, that upgrades the rabbi from a volunteer to a poel, to a worker. And then the rabbi knows that if he does not do what he's supposed to do, he has to give the money back. If you give the rabbi $20, or you give him $1,000, give him whatever you give the rabbi for mechiras chametz. The rabbi is a worker. the money you give, it's assumed to be okay. I'm now you're hiring. How much? You decide how much you want to pay me. You want to pay me $100? Okay, go pay me $100. Okay, if the rabbi does not sell the chametz, the rabbi must give back the $100. Refund. I didn't do the service. You asked me, you know, go to a dry cleaners. If you don't clean the clothing, so give me back my money. Give me back the money. You do a service. You don't do the service, give me back the money. Therefore, the rabbi, if I don't go sell the chametz, this money has to go back to the people. I want the money. That changes the equation in halacha. Now it's no longer called a chazaka, shaliach, that's just a presumption. It's a vadai. The rabbi certainly sold the chametz because he's been paid and he knows the money's going to go back if he does not do the bidding. That's the reason why you give money to a rabbi. Now here's the issue. Today, well, it used to be in America for a point in time. I don't know today, not in the metropolitan area. There are, of course, a lot of shuls have salaried rabbis, but it used to be that every rabbi had a salary in America. You know that's the way the rabbinate was set up in America. You don't have shtibluch. A rabbi has a salary. There are members. The average shul used to be, it still is very common. You have a shul. And there are membership dues, and there's fundraising, and they hire a rabbi, and they pay a rabbi a salary. And what is the duties of a rabbi? Some shuls have contracts with very specific details what his obligations are. Some don't, but whether it's in the contract or whether it's not in the contract, it is assumed as a davar pashut that if you are hired to be the rabbi of a shul and you are receiving a salary, part of your job is to take care of mechiras chametz. Your congruents have chametz and need to sell it to a guy, and you are the rabbi. They will come to you, appoint you as their agent. They will tell you, you'll fill out a document telling you exactly where the chametz is located, and you will go to the guy, you'll find a non-Jew and do a proper halachic transaction with all of the details to do it. That's why they're paying membership dues. If you pay your membership dues, part of your membership dues go to pay the rabbi to make sure he does his duty. Therefore, if you are a member of a regular shul, you don't need to give the rabbi money. If the only reason why you're giving the rabbi money is to make the rabbi from an agent into a poel, so if you're walking into a shul, you have never saw this rabbi before, and you're just coming over here, you know, do me a favor, you do this, so I want you. I'm not your rabbi. I have no obligation to you. I'm doing you a favor. I'm doing you a favor by going and selling your chametz to a non-Jew. So I'm just an agent. Who says I'll do it? What do I have from you? You want to say chazaka? Okay, you want to rely upon chazaka, good for you. But if you're a very serious person about life, you're not going to rely upon chazaka. So what are you going to do? So someone who walks in off the street who has no connection to this rabbi has to pay him to make the rabbi into a poel, into a worker. Because the rabbi then knows that if he does not do the job, he's a ganav. He has to give the money back. And if he takes the money, doesn't do the job, takes the money, then he can't, then he's in a lot of trouble. He can't be a rabbi. He can't be a rabbi. He can't be a ganav being a rabbi. This is a contradiction to be a ganav and a rabbi. Right? You can't be. Doesn't work together. So you can't do that. But let's say you're a member. I pay membership dues. Then you're not mechuyev. You don't have to give the rabbi one penny. You don't got to give the rabbi one penny because I paid membership dues. And the membership dues go towards your duty to do this. So you're anyway a poel. You're anyway my worker. Anyway, you have to do it. So why then do we find that the people who pay membership dues, it happens to be that the statistics are, the people who pay their membership dues on time are the ones who always give the rabbi a check for mechiras chametz. It's just the opposite. Those are the people who don't have to give the rabbi a check for mechiras chametz. So obviously today it transformed into a minog. A minog, obviously there are other elements. There are definitely other elements in selling chametz to a guy. There are other elements that it's a way to Mahana the rabbi, Mederach Kavod. Like I know someone. I know the truth. I tell you, I know the truth. In a certain place where I daven, they purchased klaf nevi'im. They purchased 8 nevi'im, all the 8 nevi'im to lane the haftorah from parchment. Why do they do this? Cost them, how much that costs? It costs a fortune. Why? Because they want to torture the Baal Kriya. You should have to prepare every week, right? Now that's not why. So why they do it? The person who gave the bulk of the money is no longer living. He's a very, very wealthy person. Enormous, enormous money. Enormous wealth. He didn't give all the money. They raised some of the money. But I know the real reason why they did it. Because this person, he wanted to, there's a certain person who, very, very poor person, who doesn't have parnasa, and he wanted to help him. So what is that person? He's a sofer. So as a dignified way of giving tzedakah, he hired him to write the nevi'im and pay him top dollar. So instead of just giving a person a handout, which would be painful for the recipient, this is parnasa, he's a sofer. So I don't really want to buy this. I don't really have a need to buy this. But as a way of giving tzedakah, give someone a job. The best tzedakah you can do is to give a person a job. So it's a nice thing to have the klaf. It's a very beautiful thing. He'll have some kavod. He'll put his name on it. Zev, v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. He'll also influence other people to participate. But the primary cause of this happening was why? I want to help this person. I want to help him with his reputation. If I'll go and I'll buy from him some Sifrei Kodesh, people will hear about it. Other people will hire him. Other people will use his services. It was a very dignified way of helping a person build a reputation to make parnasa in a dignified way. So the same Mechiras Chametz, it is a dignified way to support a rabbi. A dignified way to support, traditionally we're very poor, it's a dignified way. It's a famous tshuva with the Chasam Sofer. And it became such an inyan of supporting to support. There was a fellow, and the fellow, he had like today people, where do you daven? The average person here, probably over here learning us, you probably daven at least 3-4 shuls. No question, every single person over here that I'm looking at, their names on the screen, you for sure all have an association with at least 3-4 rabbanim, and you're close with all of them. Comes mechiras chametz, who do you go to? Who do you go to? So when you go to the rabbi, you know, it's an opportunity. There are two elements of going to Mechiras Chametz. This used to be in the olden days. Today it's not. The young generation doesn't know what I'm talking about. They look at me like I'm from Mars. But the old timers, who many of these old timers are no longer even living, it's already an old thing, is when you go to do Mechiras Chametz, you're really doing two things. Number one, you're using it as an opportunity to support the rabbi, to give the rabbi money for Pesach in a dignified way. Number two, you are submitting to his authority. You are showing your loyalty. You are my rabbi. You are humbling yourself to show you are my rabbi. In certain shuls, if a balabas would not come to Mechiras Chametz to the Rav, I'm not joking with you, it is a declaration of war. A balabas does not show up to sell the chametz to the Rav, it means I'm at war with you. I don't hold from you. I can't wait for your contract when it's up for renewal. I will not vote for the renewal of your contract. I have a complaint against you. It's a declaration of war. Today, you say this to anyone under the age of 30, they'll look at you like you're from outer space. You're from Mars. You don't know, even people who are older, they say, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? I know it is takich today, it means really nothing today, 95%. But years ago, go back 25 years ago, Balabas, America was much more formal. People were much more disciplined. We were all yekas back. People were all yekas back then. Everyone had a certain dignity. You don't go to your rabbi to sell the chametz. Woo! This is major league declaration of war. So what happens if you have a situation where you're very loyal to many rabbanim, if you don't go to a Rav, it's a declaration of war. And also, if you're a wealthy person, you want to be mahana, you want to be to dignify the rabbi by giving by giving a gift, what are you going to do? So you know what people used to do? I'll go to all the rabbanim. I'll sell my chametz by this rabbi and by this rabbi, and I'll sit down by them, I'll make believe you're my only rabbi to show my loyalty and to be mahana you with a nice gift. And I'll do this by 3-4 rabbanim. So what's the shaila? Who owns your chametz? Each rabbi has their own guy. Each rabbi sells the chametz to a different guy. So you sold your chametz. If I go and I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, and I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, and I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, who owns the Brooklyn Bridge? Who owns it? How many people can own the Brooklyn Bridge already? How many people can you sell it to already? So they asked the Shah to the Chassam Yosef, and he said, it's an excellent question, but one thing I can tell you, La Halacha, even though it's a serious question, the chametz is sold. If you sell the Brooklyn Bridge to you, it's no longer yours. It's no longer your bridge because you sold it to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. You sold it to all of them. So who does it belong to now? Reuven, Levi, Yehuda, Shimon? Let them fight about it. It's their problem. But one thing is for sure, you sold it. So you sold your chametz to 5 goyim? So let them fight about it. Let them go to court. Let them take you to court. Let them take the rabbanim to court. Which guy? But one thing is for sure, you sold your chametz. We don't say in halacha that if you sell your chametz to multiple goyim, it's a meg, then it's just a giloy, I didn't sell it. Because I can't sell it to Reuven. No. La halacha, if you sell your chametz to multiple people, someone owns the chametz. Who?
The
first one. So figure out which was the first one. Go check out, you have to go check all the documents, see the dates, do analysis. You have to do a forensic analysis of exactly who owns the chametz. But it's sold. It's not your problem. So you can do it. You can do it. You can go and you can sell your chametz to multiple rabbanim. You have nothing to worry about. One of them owns the chametz. Let them fight about it when the time comes, when they want to go and eat your Cheerios, or they want your leftover Cheerios. Let the goyim go to the Supreme Court. Maybe that will be more important to them than some other major issues in this country to decide which one can take my leftover Cheerios for breakfast. So that's the Chassam Sofer. You know, my father all the years, it's interesting, my father all the years, it's very funny, it's a personal story. It's chus of my mother, Aleha Shalom. My father, he was a big thing by him. He sold the chametz all the years of it. He really took it very, very seriously. It was one of his big, big things. And his own shtaris. My father passed away, so now, you know, what do I do? You know, so I said to my mother, so I have to sell the chametz this year. Who should we sell the chametz to? So I said, you know, I can go to this rabbi, that rabbi, I'm close. So she said to me, without even blinking an eyelash, so go to them all. Go to them all. Sell it to all of them. Be mahana all of them. Be mahana. Because my mother understood mechiras chametz. So you go to Rabbi A, Rabbi B. And I did. I went to this, I went to 3 rabbanim. I did 3 rabbanim to show, you know, pledge my loyalty to 3 rabbanim. I no longer do that anymore. I got tired of doing that. I got lazy. I just do it to one rabbi. But like, yeah, posh. You go, it's derech eretz. It's a certain degree of derech eretz to sell your chametz. That's how it evolved. Today, it's not like that today. Today, there's no question it's not like that. In fact, many people don't even sell the chametz altogether. Many people today, it's a different type of life. People, if you're not in a business where you have stock of chametz, what do you already have today in your home? You have some schnapps. So if you have expensive, not everyone has a collection. So then in the Hanami, you're going to sell your chametz. But if you don't have a collection of a sophisticated, you know, expensive, rare chametz, schnapps, what do you already have in your house? So some people, they'll claim they have absolutely nothing in their home, and therefore they don't bother selling, which is not so simple to do because you never, never know. You really never know what you have. You may have something of value. You may have a fund. Maybe you have investments, and your investments are being managed by others, and they may have invested your funds in stocks that you have shares in companies that own chametz to a significant degree. That's a shaila. Are you mechuyev to sell stocks? It's not real chametz. It's ownership. It's not so simple. All right, these are all different. You never really know. So all of the rabbanim advise you should always sell your chametz. Just if you have even have nocha, just write down your name on the shtar. If I have anything of value that in my mind I wouldn't want to sell, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it can possibly be. But you never know. It's a minhag Yisrael to sell chametz. And even just to preserve tradition, there's something to it as well. And you never know what you really have. You may have things that you're not even aware of. So just put your name down as a backup, just in case you do have something of value that should be sold to a non-Jew. Now here I want to enter into something, a very important topic. And let me illustrate the issue with a very common scenario. And it touches upon what exactly is Mechiras Chametz all about. And it really opens up a can of worms. It's a very, very big topic, and there's a machlokes ha'poskim, and it touches not just upon mechiras chametz, it really touches upon a lot of things about Judaism and life in general. And to illustrate this with a very simple example, you own a pizza store. Very common example. You own a pizza store, you own a bakery, pizza store, bakery, and you have a lot of chametz. You have flour, you have there's a lot of chametz in your, but you want to go the next step. Mitzoy Shabbos, Mitzoy Shab, Mitzoy Pesach, what is the Minig Yisrael? This is Ma'amish, the first halach in Shulchan Aruch. The first halach in Shulchan Aruch is that Mitzoy, it's even in the Torah, the first part of the Torah, on Mitzoy Pesach, you go buy pizza. Mitzoy Pesach, the first thing you do Mitzoy Pesach is you go to the big Havdalah, and you go to the pizza store, and you wait online, you fight to get pizza, to buy pizza. So the pizza store is overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed with customers around the block. They even auction off. It became a fundraising event now. Fundraising event. We're going to auction off. You buy a ticket. Everyone should buy. The money's going to go to tzedakah. We're going to raise money for a very worthy organization. And everyone should buy raffles. It's a very good fundraising technique to raise money. They raise a lot of money. And what do you win? What's the pull to raise money? You get the first pie of pizza, Mitzvah Shabbos. You come to the store, and you cut the line, we come to you, we bring you the first pie of pizza right out of the oven, no line for you. It's a great technique to raise money. They do this now. Why not? Amcha Yisrael, tzrichim money. It's a way to raise money. Always looking for a gimmick to raise money. Okay, fine. So what does the pizza store do? The week before Pesach, they're very busy. They're making pizza. They purchase large amounts of chametz, and they make the pizza, the dough, and they put it in the freezer. They put it in the freezer, all ready to go, all ready. And then when Mitzoy Pesach, they right away and then what do? They sell it to a guy, knowing they're going to buy it back. I'm selling it to you, knowing good and well I'm going to buy it back. So I want to have it all ready to go. So Mitzoy Pesach, we can now go and put the finished product in the oven, and we'll have a hot pizza for you ready to go. We'll be able to handle the demand and make a killing and make a lot of money. And the bakeries are the same thing. They prepare all the challahs frozen. The dough is frozen. It's all chametz gamur. And they sell it. And they buy it back. The rabbi buys it back the moment when Pesach is over. And now they save themselves an enormous amount of time. And they're able to proceed and produce a large quantity of chametz for the customer. Now, what's the problem? The problem is, it's bad enough to sell your chametz to the guy, knowing in the back of your mind that when Pesach is over, you're going to buy it back. That's like a harama. Is that really called the transaction? What kind of transaction is this? I'm selling my chametz to the guy. Excuse me, that's what you call a sale. You're selling the chametz to the guy, knowing good and well that Mitzvah Pesach, listen, we have an appointment Mitzvah Pesach, we're going to continue the transaction. We're going to continue, the way it works, you ever see how it's done, It's basically the rabbi, he sits down with the Gentile and he says, we have here, I have over here shtaris. You know, I don't know how much the people over here wrote down on these documents they have chametz. I really honestly don't know how much it's worth. Some people sold you a half a box of Cheerios. And some people are selling you stock in General Mills worth $500,000. I don't know. Some people are selling you some whiskey. I don't know how much it's worth. With $5, $10, what are you going to get on eBay for an open bottle of whiskey? How much can you get already for it? 30 cents, what are you going to get already for it? What are you going to get? I have no idea, but here are the documents. In these documents, there are some people that have stores, they have merchandise, they have stock, they have this, they have that. Let's assume there's some value here. Who knows? It might be worth in total $100. It might even be worth $500,000 on these documents. Whatever it is, we're selling you every single thing that's written here and even what's not written here. It's yours. Ah, how much are you going to pay? Listen, all I want from you today is a deposit. $10. And by the way, if you don't have the money for the deposit, here, here's 20 bucks. You can keep the other 10. That's what the rabbi does. I just want a deposit. So here, here's 20 bucks. Just give me a deposit. A deposit, $10. And by you giving me $10, you own it all. You own everything. And what about the balance? You owe it to me. It's a loan. It's a loan. You owe it to me. You owe me $500,000. I don't know. I don't know what it's worth. It might be worth $1,000. It might be worth $500,000. You owe it to me. But it's yours. And the way you're going to buy it, you're going to give me a deposit of $10. And you own everything. And the balance you will owe to me as a loan. And what we're going to do is, Mitzoy Pesach, you're going to come back here the second Yom Tov is over. Make sure you're here before Rabbeinu Tam's man. Make sure you're here 50 minutes after Shkia. And what we're going to do then is we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to then appoint professional appraisers. We're going to hire a service that's going to go through every single shtar and knock on every single door and say to the people, we want to see the chametz that you sold and we want to evaluate it so we can figure out the balance and exactly how much Mr. Gentile is going to pay Mr. Rabbi. We want to know. We want to make the evaluation. We will continue the process mitzoy. Mitzoy Pesach. That's basically how it works. There's a lot more too, but that's the basic gist. The Gentile gives a deposit, and we make an appointment for Mitzoy Pesach to figure out how we will appraise the value of everything that is on these documents to determine exactly how much money the Gentile owes the Jew. Owes the rabbi, owes the Jews, owes these people, and then we'll proceed. And the guy gives the $10, then he has to do the same thing to purchase the chametz, to rent the property where the chametz rest upon, v'chulu, and then when he comes back, Motzoi Pesach, the rabbi says, you know something, this is going to be a big mess, to go get an appraiser, to go to house to house, you know what? I have an idea. Why don't we just, I'll buy back from you. I'll buy back. You owe me a lot of money. You know what? I'll give you 50 bucks and we'll call it quits. I'll buy it back. We'll cancel the loan. Anyway, you owe me all this money. And you only gave me a deposit of $10. You know what? I'll give you $20. And you know, we'll just call it quits. And the guy's very happy to do so. You give him the $20. Okay, legally it works. Legally you can say, but in the big picture of things in your mind, you know, it doesn't seem right. Mark, does this really seem right? It's a harama. It's a haramah, it's a subterfuge, it's trickery. And especially when the guy does it more than 1 year. My father, Zichron Levracha, he had a very interesting collection of Gentiles over the years when he sold the chametz. And some were very good, some were really, really good. In the beginning it wasn't so great, but he had over the years some really brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy that really understood every little detail of what was going on. And then the first time he dealt with a certain guy, the guy really was terrified. He really thought he'd been suckered into a deal, and he's going to have to pay a balance of $1 million. And he was really, really terrified. It's not a joke. He was really, my father did such a good job on him. He really thought he's going to have to pay now $1 million. And was he glad to get rid of it, to give it back, to get the whole thing over with. But the next year, he wasn't so terrified. The next year, he wasn't terrified, and he was very happy to make some money off this. So it's a harama. The ganze Sache is a harama. Isn't it a harama? It's a show. It's a facade. It's a whole thing is a harama.
And you have to tell the goy not to convert during Pesach to Judaism.
I want to talk about also. Let's say, can you sell your chametz to an irreligious Jew? Not so simple. Okay, we'll come to that in a few moments. So this is the process. So here's the shaila. The shaila is, it's already bad enough when you're selling the chametz of a regular person to a non-Jew, but when you go and you're in a bakery, you're a pizza store, and you actually put in an order before Pesach to acquire chametz, to purchase chametz, and then to hire workers to make all, to work on the chametz, to get the chametz ready so that you can sell it mitzoy Pesach, anticipating that you're going to buy it back, that's really rubbing it in. It's bad enough if you're selling the chametz you have in your home, that just sitting around doing nothing. But to actually go and buy chametz and prepare chametz so that mitzoy Pesach you can buy it back and you can then proceed and sell it, you know, that's really, really, really pushing the envelope. You're really, really going too far. Is it right or wrong? People do this all the time.
In sales, they banned, they wouldn't let the pizza stores open on multiple
cases. Where?
Two Garden Hills.
They wouldn't let them. Why not?
Because of this.
Because of the harama?
Because of this, and the people, you know, they found cheating, starting to cook ahead of time.
Okay, I think it's probably because they started before, ahead of time, and other things. Mm-hmm. But all the bakeries do this. They all do this. They all prepare in advance. They've been putting orders like business as usual, all lechatchila, knowing that when Pesach is over, you're anticipating to sell it, to buy it back, and you're preparing for it. You're really going a little bit too far. It's bad enough to go and just sell your chametz and just sit back and do nothing, but to go so far, is it proper or not? So there are two sides to this coin. There are two different approaches to this answer. One answer is what's called the Tevua Shah. This is the very famous Tevua Shah. And he says something that is a very big chiddush, a tremendous chiddush, and all of the Paiskim, they deal with the Chiddush, they either embrace it or they reject it. The vast majority appears to reject it, what I'm about to tell you. And the Tevua Shah basically, it's a very important Tevua Shah, it's basically, you're right, it's a harama. We have a real problem. This is a real halachic problem. Knowing in advance that you're selling something, knowing in advance that you're going to buy it back, truly challenges the authenticity of the sale. And if the sale is not authentic, then it turns out that you're having in your possession chametz. It's a real problem. It is not a joke. This is a real bona fide problem. And therefore, the Tevua Shah says an awesome chiddush, and he says, the only reason why the sale works is only because the truth is you anyway are mevatel your chametz. A person is mevatel the chametz. What do you say? You say kol chamira, kol chamira v'chamira d'ikar bereshusei dechazite udelo chazite debiati udelo biati. The yadanli udelo yadanli. libatel v'lehevi hefker ka'afra de'ara. The truth is, you don't have any chametz. You threw out all your chametz. You did beer. Whatever you have in your home, you're covering up, and you're making a declaration. It is hefker. You make that declaration. A mafker ka'afra de'ara. Being that be'etzen, you mafker it. So it's not really yours. It's not even really yours to sell. So why bother selling it? Well, if it's really hefker, so go take all the schnapps and throw it in the garbage. What's it sitting there on the shelf in your closet, covered with paper? If you're really sincere in being mafker, so throw it in the garbage. So you're not really sincere about being mafkerit. You have there on your shelf, make believe, $1,000 of schnapps. Make believe, a gvir, $1,000 of chametz, of schnapps. Bottles that have never been opened. And you make a declaration, it's all hefker. Really, it's all hefker. So go put it outside in front of your home for the sanitation department to come take away if it's really hefker. What's it doing there on your shelf? Well, you know, why should you'll say whatever you want to say. But technically speaking, I made a declaration. My declaration works. Now, because we question your sincerity in your being mafkir, we allow you to sell it to a Gentile. But you'll say to me, but I'm not really selling it to the. It's a harama because I'm going to buy it back. I'm going to buy it back mitzvah Shabbos. I know I'm buying it back, and the goy knows I'm buying it back. What kind of transaction? What kind of joke is this? It's a harama. Listen, it's a sale. You know, you have a document. You have witnesses. You have money being transferred. You know, a sale is a sale. You're telling me it's not sincere? You got a good point, but in this particular instance, being that you were mafker it, and you don't really own it. The only reason why you're selling it is you're selling the part of you that's insincere because you didn't put it out in front of your house for the sanitation. For that, this type of sale, which is a harama, it works. In other words, each one of these two parts of the process make up for the other. Your hefker is not so sincere. So what do you do to deal with the insincere element of your hefker? You do a transaction, which is a harama. Each one by itself does not hold water. But together, it's good enough. I was mafker it. You can't tell me I'm chayiv for bal yira, bal yimotze. When I said kol chamira, I was mafker it. Yeah, if you mafker it, so why didn't you put it in front of... I sold it! Oh, you sold it? What kind of sale is that? You're buying it back. I was mafker it. What kind of hefker is it? I sold it. But what kind of sale is it? It's a transaction that is a harama works for a hefker that's a harama. That's what the Tua Shar says. It's a very...
HaKadosh Baruch Hu agrees to that?
Puk hazi ma'ama advar. It's a tremendous chiddush what he says. And there is a nafkamina. And the nafkamina basically is pizza stores. Because a pizza store, if you go so far, it's one thing you want to use the Tuva Shar is only discussing a case where a person has in his home schnapps. You know, the Tua Shar works very well when you have in your home schnapps, let's say, worth $50. Everyone is different. So what would happen if you would come home one day and your wife would tell, you know what, I threw out all the schnapps. All the schnapps on the top shelf. Would it really bother you? Would it really bother you? So if the type of chametz that you're selling to the guy, if you'll come home one day and he'll tell you, guess what, it's all in the garbage. So what is your reaction? If you'll have a fit and you'll storm out of your house and need to go to your psychologist to calm you down, then it goes to show you're not really mafkerit. But if someone's going to tell you that the $50 of shtaps, of your bottles that are half, they're open, that are and collecting dust up there. It's in the garbage. Nu, gamzu l'toiva. A person will say, nu, all right, so it's in the garbage. So you know what that really means? It really means that when you say kol chamira on your chametz, you really are sincere enough. Because you really couldn't care. It's not no big deal. It's a couple of bottles of schnapps. I'll buy some more better bottles next time. It's not going to make or break me the $50 I threw in the garbage. So that type, so you really are sincere. But if you are sincere, so throw it in the garbage. There, you can say the mechira is a good mechira. It's a harama. The mechira is not such a great mechira either. Then you can put the two together. But if you have in your possession thousands of dollars of chametz, and it's clear as day, you're not being mafkarit. You can say kol chamira all you want. Come on, this is your parnasa. You're not sincere. And if certainly you're owner of a pizza store, and you go and you order chametz, come on now. You're ordering, putting in a massive order of chametz stick of flour, and chametz stick of ingredients, and you're sitting the whole day of Pesach making pizza and putting it in the freezer in order to buy it, in order to be ready for Mitzvah Shabbos, and you're telling me now, kol chamira v'chamira, de'ika b'reshusei, libatel. Oh, really, 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 really. What have you been doing the last few weeks of here preparing for Mitzvah Pesach? Really, libatel. Come on! It's a joke. And now you want to go do a mechira? That's a joke? That's an abuse. That's an abuse of the mechira. That's an abuse of the hefker. That's an abuse of the tvua shar. The tvua shar is not discussing that case. He's discussing the case when you have in your home new a couple of old bottles of schnapps. You really couldn't care less about them anyway. And it's just you don't want to go to the tircha of throwing them in the garbage. So you sell it to the guy and you mafker it. No, that you can say your hefker is taka, real hefker, and the any element that it might not be a good hefker, so you did a mechira. No, the mechira is a harama. No, it's not a harama. If the guy really wants it, I'll be very happy to take a couple of bucks. I'll take a few dollars. Make it convenient, I'll buy it back. That's where the mechira works. But when you're dealing with the real deal, then ein achinami. The mechira doesn't work. And you got a big problem. And that would mean that people who own pizza stores and engage in this activity, or for that matter, people who own real valuable chametz have a very big problem. They really have a very big problem. Now, truth is, though, the vast majority of the poskim reject the tvua shar. It's something beautiful to rely upon for the average person. But there are many situations where people have significant chametz. And they really do have to sell it. It's their parnasa. And there is something called the mechira. Oh, but it's a harama. No, it's a harama. The bottom line is it works. It works. It does work. Should a pizza store take advantage of this? They really shouldn't. But they do. They do because I guess they have no choice. This, they feel it's a significant part of their parnasa. And technically, we're not chayish. We don't accept the tzvu ashar. We don't accept this. It's an ideal. It's an ideal to acknowledge that the mechira is problematic and label it a harama, and only to use it in combination with hefker. But if you're going to tell me that there is no hefker, and thus, the mechira that is a harama is really not a real mechira, it's a problem, then you got a big problem. And do you need to take into consideration, but other poskim say no such thing. It's a harama, so it's a harama. Does it work? It works. Chazal allowed, they invented this, it's not... It's a very hard thing to deal with. There are... It's a very difficult principle to deal with. Why to deal with these issues?
Concept was begun in the 1600s for the beer merchants.
Exactly. Now the beer merchants. See, there's another issue because the beer merchants, they were not selling those part of the element. It's not chametz gomor. A lot of the things that when you sell chametz today is called chametz nuksha. Nuksha is a form of chametz that's not called chametz gomor. It's not bread.
Yeah, that's why I had a pizza store in Queens that once called me for a flour delivery on Yom Tov.
On Yom Tov.
He didn't want to make it before Yom Tov. He asked me for a Shri Shal Pesach delivery of flour. When I hung up the phone, I called the Vod.
You said Lashon Hara.
I had no.
Yeah, of course, of course.
I should have done it.
No, of course, of course. You're Machshel Machshelam. We're going. That's right. That's right. 100%.
I said you give my Hashgacha.
So this is it is, but you know, there's hetem mechira for shavias next year, something another similar type of principle, and there are other examples where chazal heter iska ribis. Okay, there's ribis. What do you do for ribis? Heter iska for ribis. Shtar mechira for. Shtar mechira for chametz, and hetem mechira for shemita next year. My father used to joke all the time is that the Surgeon General paskins that it is also to smoke because it'll destroy your lungs. It's suicide to smoke. So how could a yid smoke? It's this mamish ushmartem me'oid lenafsha seichem. No problem. You just rent your lungs to a guy. Right? And smoke all you want. I'm not doing anything wrong. It's not my lungs. I rent it to a guy. Okay? It's harama. Harama. Okay, there's a vast literature on is it really called harama? Is bechiras chametz really called harama? Many paiskim do not view it like that. The Tzvua Shor does view it as a harama, but he says it's limited in scope. The mechir is only done in connection with hefker. And the nafka mean, if you're going to follow the Tzvua Shor's approach to what mechiras chametz is all about, is in unique situations where you're not really mafker it. Most people today, when they have chametz in their home, what are they selling already? What are you selling already? You have some chametz. It's basically, it's too much of a tircha for you to get it out of the house. You just rather just leave it in the shelf and leave me alone. You don't bother it. Chametz is like asbestos. You have asbestos in the basement. What do they tell you? You don't bother it. It won't bother you. Just leave it alone. Is it making particles in the air? It's not doing anything. You leave it alone. That's chametz. You don't bother it. It won't bother you. Would you like someone to come and take away the asbestos? Yes, I would. Do I have the time, the patience, and the money to have it done properly? No. So just leave it alone. You don't bother it. You know, it doesn't bother you. You have chametz in the house. What do you got already? Some schnapps? So throw it in the garbage. Listen, I don't have the time, effort to go do it right, to go look around what's going on. It's up there in the closet. You don't bother it. It doesn't bother you. I'm mafker it. But if I'm mafker, how come I don't get rid of it? So I sell it to the guy. It's a magical combination. Each one compensates for the other. Nafkamina, if you own a pizza store, then don't tell me you're mafker it. You're not mafker it. You want it. Oh, you want to do the mechira? Tzvua Shor says, sorry, mechira is a harama. You can't do a real mechira. So then you got a big problem. So other paiskim say, we disagree with the Tzvua Shor. Whoever said it's a harama. Mechiras chametz, it's not a harama. It works. This is a legal transaction. It works. People buy stocks. How does it work in the stock market? You only want to buy a stock for a couple of days, a couple, whatever it is, until it goes up, and then you sell it. I have no plan to keep it forever. I'm just holding on to it for a period of time until I'm going to sell it. So why is chametz different? I'm selling you my chametz for a period of time. That's the way it works in the business world. People, they throw around things from place to place. You work one day for this company, musical chairs. You go to this company. Look at all the sports professionals. This year they're playing for the Yankees. Next year you're playing for the Dodgers. And the next year you're playing for the Red Sox. It's musical chairs. You go from place to place. I have the chametz today. For this week, you own the chametz. It's not mine. V'zehu. It works. You can do whatever you want. And men, most people who see to are very lenient in this matter, especially stores, they do this, they all do this today. That became the minute. Okay, now there are other issues about mechira. So what about, are you allowed to sell chametz? It's a very interesting shaila. I never realized how simple it is. are you allowed to sell chametz to an irreligious Jew? He couldn't care less. An irreligious Jew. Totally not Shomer Shabbos. His mother's Jewish. What does it mean? Nothing to him. His mother's Jewish. He's a guy. He's married to a non-Jew. Are you allowed to sell chametz to an irreligious Jew? No, you're not. A Jew is a Jew. But what's very interesting is, I never knew this, that after the fact, and this happens all the time, you should know, rabbi sells chametz to who he thinks is a guy. This guy's not a guy. Of course it's a guy. And then one day they find out he's Jewish. Like Cardinal O'Connor. He's Jewish. We know now for a fact that he's Jewish. It's a pile plime. It's no joke. He's Jewish. We know now for a fact that Cardinal O'Connor's mother is Jewish. So if she's Jewish...
Alive,
no, he died. O'Connor died 25 years ago at least. Remember Cardinal? He was too Jewish to be a guy. If you remember him, he had a certain dignity that they don't find by guy. He had to be Jewish. Okay, and so he's Jew. Would you ever imagine, I sold chametz to the cardinal? I mean, how what bigger guy can you get than that? Sell to the Pope. Oh, guess what? The Pope is Jewish, right? He would have been the Pope if he would have been alive.
Don't sell to anyone who wears a yarmulke.
Well, he wears a red yarmulke, so, you know, red yarmulke. So you find out now that the person you go, the person is an irreligious Jew. So the halacha is, believe it or not, it's mutter after pay. It's not called chametz she'ovar alav haPesach, because an irreligious Jew, as far as we're concerned, is a guy. And it's a nasty thing to say. Lechatchila, you're not allowed to sell it to an irreligious. He's Jewish, but after the fact. If you discover after Pesach, the rabbi discovers, oy vey, the guy is not a guy. He's a Jew. So what would happen if it should be chametz, she'ovar olav haPesach, chametz that was in the possession of a Jew over Pesach, is osur behano. You're not allowed to derive benefit. So all of the balabatim in Yeshua are not going to be able to have pleasure throughout all the chametz. No. It's a tremendous chiddush, but that's the halacha. Unfortunately, if the irreligious Jew does not identify with Judaism, we also don't identify him with Judaism. And if he is in possession of your chametz and Pesach now is over, you're allowed to have hanah. And this changes the equation when it comes to stores. There are many stores. Can you go to certain stores? They're owned by corporations or they're owned by Jews. Shopping stores today, you know, it's a different world today. The world shopping experience today became corporate. You don't really have so many local stores anymore, grocery stores that are owned by people, but you do have every so often. And you discover the person who owns this little store that you buy your groceries in is a Jew, but he's an irreligious Jew. Totally irreligious, no connection. He's not even traditional. One thing you have, Jews are traditional, they go Yom Kippur. You know, Yom Kippur, they have a little respect. This guy is zero. We're talking over here, zero. But he's Jewish. And now Pesach is over. Can you go to the store and buy? Or have a corporation? Who's the people, who's the stock owner? So it's a very important practical halacha that when the Jews who are owning the chametz of Pesach do not identify with Judaism, we also do not have to identify them with Judaism. And the law of chametz over a love of Pesach that states that if it's owned by a Jew, it becomes forbidden, does not apply. You don't have to be better than them. You don't get them involved. Okay, another very big issue about chametz, selling chametz, is location, location, location. There's always a very big problem with people today who live in the global village. People have property in Eretz Yisrael. People that live in have property in Los Angeles. And the time zones are different. When do you buy it back? Does the sale need to follow the time, the location of where the chametz is, or where the person is? What is the ikar? Where the person is, or where the chametz is? What about when you pass the international dateline? So what do you do about all these? So halacha lemayis, the bottom line is, we're machmir both ways, and we are lenient both ways. There's mamish a split amongst the paiskim. Is the Iker Baal Yeroa Baal Yimotze dependent upon the location where the chametz is found? And therefore, if the chametz is in America, it has to be sold by the end of the fifth hour in America. Or does it go where the owner of the chametz, he is in Eretz Yisrael? So obviously, l'chadchila b'zman hazeh we're machmir that, and also when it comes to buying it back, don't let the rabbi buy back the chametz too early, because for you it's still Pesach. So you, so if you're living in a different part of the world, different part of the globe, with a different time zone, it might still be for you Pesach. If you have chametz in Los Angeles, and the rabbi is buying back the chametz mitzvah Shabbos, mitzvah Pesach, it's still Yom Tif in Los Angeles when the rabbi is buying back the chametz. So when he's buying back your chametz for you, it's less of a problem when the rabbi buys it back, because you don't want to acquire it. The rabbi can do whatever he wants, but if you're in Los Angeles and you sold your chametz, I don't want to buy it back. Well, who told you to buy it back for me, rabbi? I only appointed you to sell my chametz. I didn't appoint you to buy it back for me during the time of Isser. So it's less problematic when the rabbi buys it back too early. But when the rabbi sells it too late, that's a very big problem. So lichatchila, we take into consideration both. You have a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael selling chametz to people in America, and America in Eretz Yisrael, Los Angeles, New York. Lichatchila, we follow both. We follow both, but b'diavad, after the fact, when a mistake was made, if you can be toile one way or another, we can be lenient, because there are definitely very strong opinions both sides of where the Baal Yerubali Matzi applies. What happens? Deliveries. Let's say you have an order. You put in an order of a chametz, and the chametz arrives on Pesach. The chametz arrives. The shipping comes in. It was shipped before Pesach, and it was supposed to arrive before Pesach, but it arrives on Pesach, or it arrives after Pesach. What is the halacha? So this is a very interesting shayla. The alumnus, a little bit over my head, alumnus, but basically it's mutter. It's mutter because while the chametz is in transit, it is considered hefker. As long as it's under the jurisdiction of the post office, under the carrier, really UPS, Amazon, while it's in their possession, it's not yours. It's there, you do not take ownership of the merchandise until it comes, you accept it in your possession. Who does it belong to then? Basically, it's ownerless, it's hefker. No one knows that it's hefker, because if they knew it was hefker, they would steal, they would take it for themselves. But it's not yours. And if a person receives an order, a person receives a shipment, and it comes in the mail, we know it was a very problem years ago. They used to send from one of the yeshivas, they would send a kit. This was a nightmare. This was such a nightmare. They don't do this anymore. They would say, they send Hanukkah. Who doesn't get Hanukkah candles, right? The Hanukkah candles from Cleveland, right? Hanukkah candles all the years for Hanukkah, the little box of the Hanukkah candles. So fundraising. So they send you a little kit, a spoon, a feather, a card, the Siddiqul Chamira, and a little plastic bag with 10 cubicles of toast to put out chametz, the 10 pieces. Water. I have to go make chametz. Here, they give you 10 pieces of chametz. 10 pieces of chametz you could put out all over your house. You don't have to bother. They send it to you. And as a thank you to the institution that sent you this nice little kit with the feather, the spoon, the card. And maybe they should send you now also a little nice LED flashlight with it. LED flashlight and 10 pieces of chametz, you send in a nice donation. Wow, how nice. You know what the problem is? The post office pulls a fast one on both of you, and they deliver it on Pesach. They first deliver it to your home. So you cholamoy Pesach, what's in the mail? 10 pieces of chametz have arrived on Pesach in the mailbox. So you're not giving that organization a donation anymore. You're going to give them a mishaberach. They sent you chametz on Pesach. Well, you're trying to actually in violation of Baal Yeroheh, Baal Yemotzeh. You're sending me chametz on Pesach? Are you indeed in violation of Baal Yeroheh, Baal Yemotzeh? Absolutely not. I didn't ask for this. Even if I did ask for this, it was not in my possession. Whenever it's in the possession of a shliach and it's not to my benefit, I do not own it. It's not considered to be mine. You cannot force upon me ownership of something which is to my detriment. And just because they drop it off in the house, it does not mean it's mine. I was never coined it. I don't want it. And you're not in violation of Baliyah Balimatsa. You just throw it in the garbage. Throw it in the garbage, and that is it. Okay, there are many more shilas, and Hashem will continue another time with some of these other issues. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Thank you for coming and listening.
Thank you.
Be well.
Okay, thank you.